Hey, welcome to another episode of Total Disruption. I am Dr. Jake Clendenning, and on behalf of the Michael Liversi, we want to welcome Miguel Hernandez to the show today. I am really excited about this conversation. You got a couple of very cool programs that you in the space that you're working in. Welcome to the show, man. Tell the audience a little bit about you.
Well, thanks for having me. So currently I'm a mental health therapist, so I'm practicing through Ohio. But I'm also trying to do coaching. So I'm also have a few programs there. One is a one-on-one, which is more what I considered like Sovereign Flow. It's my business name slash program. And then I have another program, Well-Balanced Warrior. So those two things are the things I'm really kind of focusing on. That's kind of what I currently really kind of looking at in my life. So
awesome. So what got you into this space, Miguel?
I think when I was working with plants a lot, was doing a lot of working with the tribes in Washington State. I was there for like 10 years, and it's like 5 years I did pretty in-depth work with working with plants. And that kind of revealed a lot of myself to myself. And from there, I just kind of decided to make different choices. And that's how I came get into being a therapist as well, was, you know, working with plants and making medicines and harvesting stuff in the mountains and all that. It's like the realization of working on my body. Okay, that's all taken care of. But a lot of times being alone in the woods and things, I noticed a lot of stuff going on in my head, a lot of concerns, insecurities, and worries. So that's kind of how the deciding to become a mental therapist came about, was just like sitting alone, realizing, boy, I got to take more care than just my body. I have less other stuff going on. So that's kind of where it led me to.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time outside. It's really where my jam is. So, I mean, there is that moment, right, of where it's noise in your head. Like you just, it's kind of like when you lay down to go to sleep at night. I don't know if anybody's seen the meme that there's a kid sitting in a kiddie pool with flippers and a Darth Vader mask playing flaming bagpipes. And it's like, this is what's going on in my head, you know, in the dark when I lay down. That's what it's like when you're alone in the woods at first. There's so much noise. Mm-hmm. So getting to the point to where you can filter down to, all right, what am I supposed to be paying attention to? What's the message? What am I, you know, really being able to focus in that spot? That's hard. Like it's really, really hard. You know, we're so accustomed to this digital space to where so much information all the time, it translates into what's going on. So to be able to filter to that, to where you understood, okay, here's what I got to do in order to travel down this mental health road. So when did you start in your mental health, you know, I don't want to say in your mental health journey in becoming that therapy side of things, about how long you've been in it?
5 years. So, you know, once I realized, oh, maybe I could do this for other people as well. Maybe I can help them find some sense of peace and calm in their own existence, right? In their own bodies, their own mind, feeling that sense of peace and calm. Because I feel like a lot of people are seeking that out, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk about your programs. Like you've got your in coaching. Most of the audience knows what one-on-one coaching is. Right. That's a fairly easy one. But like talk about Sovereign Flow. And that's a trademark, which is cool. We just went through that process for us. So that takes work. So good job, you know, good on you for getting that done.
Well, it's like, first thing is reading through it is, if you put trademark, you're showing the world you're intending to trademark it. So that's where I'm at. So I haven't done the full paperwork process of trademarking, but, all that to say, so Sovereign Flow is specific to one-on-one, and really it's boiled down to its most basic kind of efforts of what it's trying to help with, is helping people remember that they have everything they need. So one of my senses that I like to use is you're built for Earth. You know, you're made for this. So the basic gist there is just trying to help people remember that, like, they're capable. They have pretty much everything they need already. We're always seeking so much externally. That kind of gets us on this trap, because it's always an external thing. Maybe it's the next person. Maybe it's the next book. Maybe it's the next retreat. Maybe it's the next sitting with, I don't know, peyote or whatever. It's like always something next it's finally going to fix me or do something. So the basic gist of Sovereign Flow is you don't need fixing, and you have most of what you need internally, right? That's sovereign flow. So the basic gist is, the reason I like those words, or I use those words, is sovereign flow is, we all have our own little specific world that we're living in. Like every one of us has a very unique experience that we're having. And so the more you're able to really get into that comfort state of I am who I am and there's nothing wrong with that, it kind of adds to the notes of the symphony of the world of all of us, right? So we're all different kind of notes to some extent. And flow, recognizing how often we're constantly battling ourselves and the world and the experiences that we're having, you know, like, oh, it shouldn't have happened that way. But it's like, you know, things happen and there's nothing you can do about shoulds or shouldn'ts or coulds and could haves. It's just like, so the flow is just kind of like, how do you find your unique position in this world and just try to flow through that without so much resistance to what it is, really, is kind of the basic gist of that.
Yeah. So it's a bigger journey, right? We can easily say, hey, you got to find, you know, all you got to do is find your purpose, get in the flow, and there you are. You know, I talked to, you know, Stephen Furry is one of our guests we've had that talks about the flow state. Mm. We've talked about that before, and you're referencing getting into the flow. I've talked to a couple other people that are, you know, looking for divine purpose and what's the channel. I love that you said it's a note contributing to the symphony of the world. Like, I wanted to back that bus up because that's a beautiful quote, man. If you have not like put that on a coffee mug and a hat yet, you better do it because that's a good one. It's a note in the symphony of the world. That's a beautiful quote. I really, really love that. So I wanted to bring that back. So like, let's talk about what, let's give the audience something actionable. Let's give them something they can do. Obviously the easy button is reach out to Miguel, get on his coaching roster, hire a coach. We know all the standard things. We know that. But like, what's one thing they can do today to start to discover it?
I think the first thing is, well, there's two like simultaneous things that I find has helped through this whole process of being a therapist and now coaching is, one is you have to be aware of it. First, you have to be aware that like, who I am, what I am currently as is, right? Without judgment, right? That's a huge part of sovereign flow is a lot of like mindfulness stuff. It's like, just be aware of like who I am, what I'm like, what my attitude's like, what I tend to respond to the world like, so that really getting to know oneself. And the other thing I was going to say was acceptance. So like, first be aware of who you are, your patterns, your habits, your beliefs, your belief systems, your structures, all set in place, and then accept that that's all that there is, and that's okay, right? Because it's hard to change or find yourself if you don't even have any awareness of who or what you are about, like what your patterns are, what your rhythms are, what your belief structures are, because then you're always just kind of pulling at threads. But the more you become more aware of yourself, the more you're able to make the changes, right? So the biggest thing there is you can't change what you don't know. So that's the whole point of that, is just become aware of yourself without judgment. And that's the huge two pieces. So how can one do that? I'll tell you the one way I did it, which I love. One of the biggest things I had recognized was maybe I do have a bad temper, you know. And maybe I'm not as happy as I think I am. And I saw those two live together quite often. So when I first, again, realized it and then accepted that, like, maybe I could do better, I could have a little less of a temper, I began to just recognize all the moments that my temper would arise. Just pay attention. Oh, okay, so I'm sitting in line, I'm driving in the car, my son's repeating the same thing over and over, repetitious kind of things being a parent. And I just begin to look at all those and then just start to dig into myself of like, why does it matter? Why do I get so upset sitting in a line at the grocery store? What was that all about? So curiosity is a huge, huge tool. It's probably the main tool that I use, curiosity, because curiosity, true curiosity is, there's no judgments. There's no care about what it looks like or what it is. It's just a constant like, I wonder, or experimentation or whatever. So, does that help, or you need something even more?
Yeah, no, that's like, I want to reiterate that a little bit.
Yeah.
True curiosity is without judgment.
Yeah.
And that is 100% amen. Do I agree with that? Absolutely true. We talked about that in my most recent book that I wrote. We lost that. You know, so many of us lost it. There was a stage in our childhood, our youth, our younger selves, to where we were curious about everything. We wanted to know everything for the simple purpose of knowing it. We took stuff apart to understand how it worked. We went out and we ate dirt to see what it tasted like. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it was curiosity for curiosity's sake, for knowledge's sake, for understanding, no judgment. Mm-hmm. And there was a spot. It's probably different for everybody, right? And it's that right preteen space. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, you know, some of us, our soft spot lasted a little longer than others. You know, maybe it was 12 years old. Some of us, it was 8, 9 years old, that we didn't lose it. We just packed it away.
Yeah.
Like we just packed it away and we decided, this is my view of the world. This is now my view of the world. This is how I'm going to approach it. And you said something earlier that brings this into focus of we're all having an individual experience. Every one of us is having a unique experience. And there's some research that goes into this, and I'm sure you've heard it, is at any given moment, there are 40 million bits of information flooding past us in whatever capacity, you know, just 40 million bits of information, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, warm, cold, you know, how my stomach feels, all the things, 40 million. And yet we're only capable of receiving about 125.
Yeah.
125,000, 125. So yeah. That is the easiest way. And it blows. I've actually done this on stage. It's one of my favorite things to do. I've got a 5-gallon Home Depot bucket, the orange Home Depot bucket that is full of confetti. It makes the event organizers really irritated when I do this, but I'll take this bucket of confetti and I'll walk into the audience and I'll say it's full of water and it's full of 40 million pieces of water. And I'll pick somebody out of the audience and I'll say, you know, here's your experience. And I'll hit them with the confetti, like totally just out of the blue. It makes some people mad because I made the wrong pick, but like, and I make a hell of a mess, but I'm like, but you only caught 125 pieces of all of that. You know, so your experience, the neighbor's experience, everybody in the same room's having a different experience.
Yeah.
And it's so true. And that's where your vision of what's going on in the world is, you know, after that curiosity piece, once you say, okay, I've learned all I need to learn, and now I'm going to be annoyed in the grocery store line or whatever. It's a decision. You're choosing to march down that road, and you just have to go back and unpack that curiosity piece. I think that's so very powerful, Miguel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so critically important. I mean, I've really dove into this myself recently.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. And without judgment, that's the real trick, right?
Yeah,
so is doing it with it. And the funny thing is, why are we self-judging?
Yeah.
What on earth? Who decided that there's a jury in the back of our mind that gets to pass judgment upon, you know, who we, it's a ridiculous notion. And I know I'm simplifying that. Awesome. Put it in the comments. Yell at me. Cool. Go for broke. Let's have fun with it. But the reality is we don't need to judge ourselves.
We're
making assumptions that don't necessarily exist.
Yeah.
You know, so I love that.
The other thing you just pointed out about curiosity is that age group is they're putting things in their mouth without fear. They're doing that thing. They're walking that thing. They're climbing that thing. They're testing that thing. They're taking that thing apart. They're breaking things. And there's not a lot of fear in there, right? So that's why, curiosity is so powerful, because as we grow up, it's like how often I'm like predicting, right? And that's this great, wonderful part of the brain is like, we're predicting things. Okay, make sure I'm not getting hurt. But curiosity is like going inward, is there's no fear about what I'll find or what is there, or what is it that I'm experiencing. It's just like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder why. Right.
And that's the right, there's the right questions right there.
Yeah.
Like when you, like, I don't want to breeze past that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a critical step.
Absolutely.
In this piece is you're going to go critical, you know, you find it interesting. I wonder why.
That's
the curiosity. Tell me more about that. You're asking yourself the questions when you're going in. Mm-hmm. Of everything that's in you, it's already there.
Yeah.
Like plain and simple. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's no hidden dragon in a closet.
Right.
There's nothing
right.
terrifying like that. You don't have, you're not going to find something you are unaware of.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. but being curious and asking, just going further in that, okay, so I wonder why that is. I wonder where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the purpose is in that, you know,
what
good does it do me? What bad does it do me? Does it benefit me to cling to that?
Yeah.
So there's such a good, just that space right there is so important.
Oh, absolutely. I when I'm with my clients and talking to them, that's really the thing I'm really like at first always talking about is like, just be curious and see what arises, and then be curious about what arises from there, and then be curious about what arises from there. So whatever answer you come up with, whatever comes up from the curiosity, just being more curious about that next thing. Because what I have found is, that fear and the other things start to jump in, and then security when we do the digging in ourselves. Because partially, I think some people deal with the fact of like, they may be concerned that like, it's real and it's true. Like maybe I am no good. Maybe I am. And just other things will arise where you start to recognize the thoughts that I'm having, the emotions I'm having as a accurate portrayal of my identity of who I am, right? And when you're able to recognize that this is just thoughts and feelings and experience of having, because I'm being curious about myself, pulling oneself away from that, right? So the next big tool I would say beyond curiosity, true curiosity, is that non-attachment, because it's a necessity. Once you start to slip into that, I feel like it's a very adult thing to do. With curiosities, we tend to start to do judgment, right? We fall into that. We lose our curiosity because we're kind of told to, right? Like you're saying, like to some degree as adults, it's like we're not allowed that space as children are to like explore, check this out, do this. And anyways, non-attachment is a huge part of that process of self-exploration, self-inquiry, because you're going to find things that maybe you're like, man, maybe I did kind of do that thing and I said that thing was pretty harsh to that random stranger for no reason. And then we might jump in quickly about judging ourselves, about being like, man, I'm, you know, maybe I'm not as nice person as I am. When it's like, no, the wording I like to use is most things in your life, if you want to help yourself, look at them as details, not definitions of self.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's solid. I think another spot where you were talking about staying in curiosity,
mm-hmm.
you know, what comes up? We'll be curious about that. We'll come up from that. Be curious about that. As adults, men in particular, we immediately go to solve for the problem.
Right.
Like we
right.
try to jump to the solution right away. And when we jump to the solution, a solution is either going to be right or wrong. So
yeah.
now we're self-implying, we're going ahead and adding some judgment to that because we have to assume if it's right or wrong, rather than staying in curiosity. I don't know who said it first, but I have to look up the book. I don't remember, guys. It was about sitting in the problem. Like you've got to spend time sitting in the problem, not solving for the problem.
Mm.
But the same is true here, right? Sit in the curiosity. Stay in the curiosity. You're not allowed. Don't give yourself permission to go, okay, well, I said this thing. Next time I won't do that, I'll say this. Well, what you're doing is you're creating a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Stay out of the solution. If it's, you know, I said this thing. All right. I said that thing. Why would I have said that?
Right.
What caused me to say that? Okay. Well, what was the cause of that? What was the cause of that? Stay in the curiosity.
Yeah.
It's not about the solution in that moment. And I that's so true. So, all right. Oh. So let's talk about, like, we're down that rabbit hole hard. I want to make sure we talk about balance warrior, like before we run out of time. Like I'm loving the conversation, but I want to make sure we talk about well-balanced warrior too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have to switch my gear because my thoughts process was a little,
I know, we were getting
deep into that, but well-balanced warrior. A lot of that came from exactly what we're talking about. This curiosity of self, curiosity of who I am, especially with the identity politics that exist now in our world. I can't help but kind of take some of that on and be like, who am I? Who do I want to be in the world rather? And so that's one thing I'll add to the curiosity and that created this is I found that the more I did seek to solve, that I tried to find a way to continue to ask questions. So how can I form a life that seeks out more questions than answers is maybe the best way to put it. Because I found really I could do any, I could look at anything and give an answer to it to some degree. It may not be accurate or true or even close to being right. But we can all come up with an answer of why I did this, why she did that, why that person texted me this, why that person didn't text me, blah, blah, blah. But if I can stay in that sense of curiosity and find questions, more and more deeper questions, that's kind of how a well-balanced warrior arose. Because like the more I did that, the more I was like, so then what, maybe I'm not trying to say this is what I am as a man, but what, I started to ask questions like, what does create a man? When does a boy become a man? So I just started to think about questions. And from that began all these other things. But one question that really, really kind of got me, that I was like, okay, I'm working. I want to do a well-balanced warrior program. I want to do groups with men, because I came across someone else's page and they said something like, there are countless men who are ready and willing to die for their loved ones. But how many of you are willing to live for them? Ooh. Something like that. Something like that. I mean, I've some of my own wording, but that's the main thing. And I was like, and then I realized, shit, it's not about just being reactive, right? I want to die for my family when shit goes down. But it's like, what about now? Like, I could eat better for my family, for my kid. I could work out more for my kid. I could show and model what it's like to like have emotions and have anger arise and how to deal with that in a healthy manner. Instead of saying you can't have it, it's just like, okay, we have emotions. They're supposed to be experienced and felt. So that was the question that got me. I was like, what am I willing to do? What am I willing to do to live for them? And that just was like, so many men, I think, would hear that one question. You die for them, but are you willing to live for them? I feel like a lot of men would feel that, not just cognitively be like, oh, that's a good question. They could feel like, shit, I really do that. I really do got to start living for these folks. I can't just wait for the reactionary issue. So that's kind of where this arose from.
That's a beautiful place, man. It's a beautiful place. And I agree with it. I think it's very accurate in that space. And I think the point of asking yourself the better questions, that's a brilliant example of, you know, solutioning. Sure, I'm willing to die for my family. How am I willing to live for them? Mm-hmm. That your brain, from a neuroscience perspective, right? And this is one of those, I talk about this all the time. It has one job. It's to do exactly what you tell it to do.
Exactly.
That is its one job. So if you get up and say, you know, well, what would I have to do in order to set myself up to die for my family? Your brain's going to march down that road. When you ask it to, what do I have to do to live for my family? It is a completely different manifesto that your brain is going to unpack, which is going to cause you to now focus on other things, which is going to require you to be curious about things you had not been curious about before. Like so asking yourself those better questions.
Yes.
And this is there's some self-coaching involved there.
Yeah.
There's an easy button to this, hire a coach and they can help you march down this road, because the reality is nobody succeeds alone.
Right.
We're a herd animal, guys, plain and simple. It's great to spend time with yourselves, but nobody. So, all right, man, Miguel, in the last minute, how do we reach you? How does the audience get a hold of you?
So emails, it's probably best. And that's Miguel@sovereignflowcoach.com. You can text, my phone number is 360-471-1188. When you text, just let me know, hey, I heard this, or I'm thinking about Sovereign Flow, well-balanced warrior, just letting me know what's going on. I do have a webpage, but I'm working on it. But it's sovereignflowcoach.com. And /1-1 coaching, so one-on-one coaching. And then my Facebook page is Miguel Hernandez, and I live in Kentucky. I don't know if those words will help you, but yeah, those are the most often easiest ways to contact me. Email and text though is really the best.
Awesome. Love it. So if you guys can't for some reason reach Miguel, you know how to reach me, you know how to reach Michael, reach out to say, hey, I want to get a hold of Miguel. We'll send you the links to that so you can make sure you connected. So Miguel, this has been awesome. Yeah. Love the conversation today. Thank you so much. We are up against the wall on this. I am Dr. Jake Clendenning, Miguel Hernandez, and on behalf of the Michael Labersi, it is your turn to disrupt.